This is a Will Hemingway Productions presentation. All recordings are copyrighted. Copyright 2017. Will Hemingway. All rights reserved. Any duplication must be approved by the creator. Please visit practicepreparedness.com to obtain permission and find other materials. Welcome, this is your host, Will Hemingway, and you are listening to the Practice Preparedness Radio Show. No tinfoil hats, no ranting rhetoric, just simple, stoic, thoughtful enlightenment designed to help you adopt a healthy, life-changing, proactive preparedness mindset. No fear, no chaos. Built from a calm, risk management, loss prevention perspective. Survival is every day. Being prepared will allow you to live well and contented. The Practice Preparedness Radio Show is broadcast live every Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m. That is 1800 to 1900 hours Eastern Time on WNJC 1360 AM in the Philadelphia, Delaware Valley area. You can also listen live via the internet and replay all of the previous shows from the practicepreparedness.com website. As Agatha Christie's great Belgian detective Hercule Poirot would say,
"In the little gray cells of the brain lies the solution of every mystery."
We would like to stimulate your little gray cells in order to create a proactive survival preparedness mindset for you. Let's get started. Today's show is going to be a series of segments focusing on beating the heat, staying out of the heat, why you need to worry about the heat, how to recognize the threat of heat through dehydration and heat prostration, etc. And then finally, some ideas of things to do to protect yourself and prepare yourself to avoid dehydration and the other negative effects of heat in the first place. Welcome, thanks for coming, and I hope you enjoy the show. This segment is entitled Beat the Heat. So, in order to beat the heat, you have to understand a few things about why you have to care about beating the heat. Because human beings are silly creatures sometimes. In fact, even when we know better, we will venture out and do things that will damage us long term, even when we know better. Look around you to see how many people drink excessively and smoke and other behave in other ways that will negatively impact their physical body. That said, in this particular situation, we're talking about the heat. And when we talk about dealing with the heat, obviously the first thing you do is try to find a way to avoid the heat. But every day we have demands placed upon us in order to perform and get tasks done for our general survival. Even in a non-quote survival situation, or should I say crisis situation, you need to perform actions in order to survive. If it's trash day, you need to tote the trash out. Don't take it out at 3 o'clock in the afternoon at the height of the heat. Wait until it's turned dark outside to drag the cans out. Oh well, if your neighbors don't like it, you're doing it in the cool weather. There may be a 20 degree difference between the temperature at 3 p.m. and that of at 8 p.m. or 9 p.m. This is the way we begin to look at how we beat the heat. Find ways to work in the shade. If you're working outside, look to see where the sun is brightest and go to a shaded area. Don't work in an area where you're in the sunlight. If you're a construction guy or you're working outside as a laborer or you're fixing your car, sit somewhere where you're in the shade. Put your gear and your equipment, your saws, your working apparatus in a place that's shaded. If not, make shade. Find a way to make shade. The investment in an up to cover where you're working is priceless in comparison to even $200 for the name brand item compared to the negative impact that it has over long term on your body. When you dress, dress in light colors. And of course, I'm breaking every rule since everyone who knows me knows that I wear basically black all the time. But I have shifted to light colors when I'm laboring outside because it's just realistic. It's not going to absorb the heat as much as if you're wearing a dark color. When in the winter, you hear me all the time say that cotton kills. In the summer, remember that cotton wicks. So although cotton, if it's tight, will restrict your motion, wear loose-fitting, light-colored cotton. It will help to wick the sweat. And as the sweat goes on to your cotton clothing, as the air goes by, it will evaporate that water and you will have the effects of evaporative cooling. Later, I'll talk about some of the things that you can purchase to help you to cool yourself down in natural means. But right now, I want to get into the bottom line of why it's important and understanding the effects of the heat so that you understand what it is that you are attempting to stop. The first thing about it is you will never get excited to avoid the heat or to do anything to protect yourself from dehydration unless you understand the negative impact. So I wanted to get into that a little bit. I'm going to place a link down below on this page that will take you to one of my websites where I have a urine color chart. Please check that out. You can download it from there so that you can look to compare the color of your urine. If you reach up over 50% of that color rate, you know you are in trouble. Don't let yourself get there. But if you are, act immediately to balance your electrolytes, balance your water and sodium level balances in your body ASAP. Before you need medical help. There's also going to be a link to humankinetics.com to an excerpt they have on there from a published report called Sport Nutrition, Second Edition. It kind of is an amalgam of research data regarding dehydration and fuel substrate depletion. I highly recommend going and reading it. I will outline some information from that and others as I go through this segment and the following segments. So let's look at what they found in their research and how it affects the way we look at this. Here's what they said. Exercise performance is impaired when an individual is dehydrated by as little as 2% of body weight. Losses in excess of 5% of body weight can decrease the capacity for work by 30%. That's pretty significant. If you are in a survival situation under stress, trying to move, leave an area that is threatening you because of fire or civil unrest or whatever it is, these things are critical to understand. The capacity to perform high-intensity exercise, which results in exhaustion within a few minutes, is reduced by as much as 45% by prior dehydration. So, in other words, if you are already becoming dehydrated at the point where you are under demand to have high endurance, like a sprint athlete would who runs a sprint race, a foot race, sprinting, where it's expecting explosive energy, if you're expected to fight for your life, these things are massively depleted by 45%. That's nearly half of your capability. That's why this is so important. Don't wait until it's too late, like I always tell you. Although sprint events in sporting offer little opportunity for sweat loss, athletes who do that, who travel to compete in hot climates, are likely to experience acute dehydration, which persists for several days and may be serious enough to have a permanent detrimental effect on their performance. So let's apply that again into the survival mode. For that matter, the day-to-day mode. I listen to my oldest son, who works in a really horrible climate in southwestern Florida, where it runs temperatures of 99, 102 degrees outside. He's constructing buildings of steel buildings. So he's having the reflective side of that heat coming off of the area he's working. He's surrounded by hard-packed blacktop that is reflecting heat and doing convective heat also. So adding to that, this is why temperatures in a city where there's a lot of blacktop are higher, sometimes as much as 3 to 5, sometimes as many as 10 degrees of that of the surrounding open areas. That is massive. A person in a laboratory, in a cool laboratory, decreases by 5% their aerobic power when they experience fluid losses that are equivalent to 3% of their body mass. In hot conditions, similar water deficits can cause a large decrease. Endurance capacity during incremental exercise and decrease by marginal dehydration, fluid loss of 1 to 2% by body weight. Even if water deficits don't actually result in a decrease of overall water mass in the body, can deplete your body's ability to respond by as much as 50%. Why does this matter? Because the main reasons dehydration has an adverse effect on your performance and physical activity is a reduction in blood volume, decreased skin blood flow, decreased sweat rate, decreased heat dissipation because you stop sweating because your body's trying to retain water. You need the water to have blood volume. Decreased heat dissipation then means increased core temperature, increased rate of muscle glycogen use. A result of maximal cardiac output, which means at 80%, the highest pumping capacity to heart that can be achieved during exercise, decreases a person's ability and impairs their work capacity in fatiguing exercise. You are much higher likely to have a heart attack, to have a cardiac arrest, because of all those factors, because it's putting so much stress on your cardiac system that you can kill yourself. I remember in the late 60s being in Arlington Cemetery in Arlington, Virginia, outside of Washington, D.C., and it was the first time, I was only 10 years old, 9 years old, I remember for the first time seeing a man who was reasonably gaunt, who had been there in the cemetery to visit the grave of a friend, and had been overcome by the heat. It was about 100 degrees outside in the sun, and had passed out and was laying on the hot asphalt. And my parents and several others helped to drag the man off of the pavement, where he was basically baking in the sun, into the shade under a tree. And paramedics came. Well, actually, they weren't paramedics yet. The ambulance came and the EMS guys there were trying to help to cool him down. And as a result of it, I became very, very aware of the effects of dehydration and heat and how they play together to damage your body. That man was hospitalized and nearly died. We never were able to follow up because we didn't know him, but he was in very poor condition. I remember that his heart rate was so low that they thought he was dead. And in that day and age, our medical response teams were basically draconian compared to what they are now. So he probably would have expired if he had been a little worse off. This is a big deal. A person's ability to tolerate heat strain seems to be impaired when dehydrated. So the critical temperature for experiencing central fatigue is somewhere around 102.2 degrees. When dehydrated by more than 5 degrees of body mass, the larger rise in core temperature during exercise in the dehydrated state is associated to cataclamine response. Yeah, I'll get that word out. And these effects can lead to increased rates of glycogen breakdown in exercise and muscle, which in turn contributes to onset of fatigue and also can cause brain injury, just like when you have a bad fever prolonged. Remember that if you are allowing your head to be in the sun uncovered, I'm not a hat guy, but if you ask most of the people who know me, they'll think I am. I hate wearing a hat. That said, I wear a hat to protect my head, to protect my head from direct sun, to protect my ears from sun. Because once you get past the dehydration problem and the threat of the damage that it does to your body, you get into other areas too, which is exposure to UV sunlight and UV light from the sun and IR and the drying and the dehydration of your skin and all kinds of other problems that can bring on the onset of carcinoma and melanoma, all things that you should never overlook. I've battled this with my son on the phone over and over again. You know how people are when they're young, they're indestructible. They don't need to hear you telling them about how they have to do all this extra work to do and take care of themselves. They're fine. They've got it. It's okay. But really, it's not. Because if you have someone between 0 and 21, each time that they get a severe sun poisoning or a sunburn, it increases, depending upon which study you look at. The research says that a severe sun poisoning will increase the likelihood of that person getting a melanoma, a skin cancer, in that area by as much as 500%. So even if it's only 50%, don't you think it's worth covering? Do you know that even if you're wearing clothing, if the clothing does not block UV rays, that the UV rays can penetrate into your skin even if you were wearing clothing, if it's not the right clothing? So be aware. Do some research for yourself. Make yourself aware of what it takes to protect yourself. Don't wait until it's too late. It's so critical. So now that I've established the idea of dehydration and heat and how it negatively impacts your body, I want to talk a little more in the next segment about what happens once you've done that, which is about how you need to protect yourself against getting dehydrated and what that takes. I've spoken about it before on some previous shows, but I want to go into it with a little more detail, and I'll do that in the next segment. We'll be back. This segment, I'm going to talk about dehydration, a common result of heat stress, but not always just that. It can also be caused as a result of cholera, malaria, dysentery, many other types of illnesses that cause you to lose fluids as a result of both sweating and high fever, and also that of, shall we say, rapid evacuation of fluids from your body. We're going to say it that way. Dehydration is the key to pretty much all of the highest threats that come from heat. I already spoke in a previous segment in Beat the Heat about the problems that come, obviously, from exposure to UV sunlight and the IR and all that. So maybe at some point I'll get into that in another segment. But I want to focus on the one that you have a lot of control over and that you need to be aware of what to do before you get to that point so that you don't get in trouble. Because by the time you have experienced a result of dehydration, it may be too late for you to fix it yourself and you may need medical help. We don't ever want you getting into that position. So first, let me start by defining it. The technical definition in physiology of dehydration is a deficit of total body water with an accompanying disruption of metabolic processes. Dehydration can cause hypernatremia, which is high levels of sodium ions in the blood, and is distinct from hypovolemia, which is a loss of blood volume. Both, by the way, can happen as a result of dehydration, but one is more threatening than the other, because hypovolemia will cause loss of blood volume, particularly plasma. I'm not going to get into that right now. So dehydration occurs when free water loss exceeds free water intake, usually due to exercise, sometimes disease, and is also commonly linked to high temperatures in the environment. Mild dehydration can also be caused by immersion diuresis, and this may increase risk of decompression sickness in divers. So if you're diving in the heat, if you go, say, to the Caribbean and you go on vacation and you decide to go diving, be very careful about that to make sure that you're very well hydrated in the beginning, because if it causes you to become mildly dehydrated and you're already dehydrated, that's a problem. Most people can tolerate a 3-4% decrease in total body water without difficulty or adverse health effects. At 5-8%, it causes fatigue and dizziness. Loss of over 10% of total body water can cause physical and mental deterioration, accompanied by severe thirst, and death occurs at a loss of between 15-25%, depending upon the person. You never, ever want to get there. So as I alluded to before, you don't only have just the heat itself that is impacting your ability to not become dehydrated, and more importantly, to maintaining the balance of electrolytes in your body so that you can function under stress and well. All these things come together. So these imbalances of electrolytes, potassium, sodium, all these things matter. So one of the big things that you run into is that if you take in a lot of processed foods while you are encountering high heat situations, the processed foods a lot of times have significantly increased amounts of sodium. Processed foods that you get at restaurants, at fast food joints, all these things are massively laden with high amounts of sodium. Those high amounts of sodium intaking at the same time that you are sweating heavily, losing water in your water balance in your body, causes a sodium water imbalance in your body, then causing an electrolyte imbalance, because electrolytes are more than just sodium. That sodium water balance in your body, then as the amount of your volume of total body water decreases, increases the percentage rates without changing the amount of potassium, magnesium that you have in your body. It increases the percentage in your body, causing an overexcited level of that particular electrolyte, and then causes a whole series of new problems. So too much water is a problem. Too little water is a problem. It's a balance, and that's the part that most people don't seem to understand. They want to lower their blood pressure. Then they lower their blood pressure so much that their kidneys and their heart and all shut down because they don't have enough pressure pumping their blood through their body. Their heart rate drops and they have a stroke from an ischemic stroke. Don't get to this place. Understand, you know, that old saying that is so commonly said that nobody even pays attention to it anymore. It really has lost its meaning, is everything in moderation. What does that mean? That means you don't want too high, you don't want too low. This is work. This is why people died at 35 before. They had no idea. They didn't even know that any of these things mattered or existed or anything they could do to change it. They didn't know what had high sodium or low sodium. They didn't know the impact. They didn't know what an electrolyte was. Science and medical technology was draconian. One day in 100 years, our version will probably be considered draconian, but at least we've come a far way from where they would use leeches to solve every problem and basically kill you, like they did with people like George Washington. So one of the things that you need to be aware of is that if you're already sweating and you're losing sodium with that as you do. If you ever looked at your shirt, if you had a dark shirt on and you sweat in the heat and you get really wet on your shirt from the sweat, when it starts to dry, the salt solidifies on your shirt and you'll have rings, white rings of salt there. That is the salt that you have lost from your body. So your sodium level has gone down. And that causes a problem. That brings you into a really serious problem. And you can become dehydrated and have these shutdowns. So what do you do about that? Well, you stay ahead of the game. So yes, you can drink too much water, but you don't want to drink too little water. You've heard the old tried and true saying, 8 glasses a day. What the heck does 8 glasses a day mean? You put on 8 glasses and that's good? No. Do you know how much is in the 8 glasses a day? What the heck does that mean? This is a stupid thing that people do. Let's talk facts, not quippy sayings. Well, 8 glasses a day has always been the standard recommendation. It's not necessary for everyone. There are factors involved. If you're eating highly processed foods, you probably need 20 glasses a day. And the problem is your body can't intake that much water all at one time. So you have to balance it with total diet. A good rule of thumb is to drink enough so that you have to urinate at least every 3 to 4 hours. For most people, that's around 8 to 10 8-ounce glasses of water. Did you follow that? 8 to 10 8-ounce glasses of water a day. Maybe you don't want to drink water. But remember, anything that you add into the water may decrease the ability for your body to accept and make use of the water that you are intaking. Tea, for example, if you are drinking tea, some, even the powdered mixes and all, are very, very high in tannic acid. And other things that are in that tea, we'll use with the air quotes, that cause it to be a diuretic. It causes you to pee it out, which means you're not maintaining that water in your body. It's not converting into body water mass, your body water mass, so it's leaving as soon as it comes in. That's of no use. Coffee may be liquidous, but it is a diuretic. Therefore, even if you are drinking it as cold ice coffee, you're likely going to pee out more than just the liquid that you took in. Not helpful. So it's really, really critical that you remember that you have to intake water constantly. So 2 to 3 cups of water every hour. Some people say double that, but at least it's a start. Overhydration is very rare. You can't really overhydrate very easily, but you can do that. So remember, you want to intake in many ways. Here are some examples of how you can take in water by foods that are water dense. Coconut water, celery, watermelon, cucumber, kiwi, bell peppers, citrus fruit, carrots, cultured dairy like kefir, yogurt, and pineapple. Another thing to consider is whether you're consuming enough calcium. With or without eating dairy products, you need the calcium. It's another one of those primary important things that you need in your body for everything to work right. Foods like organic probiotic yogurt, cultured cheeses and raw milk provide very high levels of electrolyte in addition to important other nutrients. So these things, you can get them from leafy green vegetables. You can get them from veggies and beans and legumes. You have to be careful. Some of those require more water in order to take those nutrients out. Sweet potatoes are a great source for that. If you go short on these different electrolytes, you can end up with digestion problems, changes in heartbeat. You can end up with muscle spasms. Very low potassium levels also cause cramps and constipation. You get digestive issues when you have problems and low levels of electrolytes. As a matter of fact, you can end up with diarrhea, constipation, cramping, hemorrhoids, nausea sometimes caused by very low sodium levels called hyponatremia. The same condition can be followed by headaches, disorientation, and respiratory problems. By the way, if you start getting migraines, the likelihood is that that's because your body has experienced dehydration. You get bone pains, confusion and dizziness, irritability. All these things are signs of dehydration setting in, low sodium or high sodium rates as a result of low total body water volume. All these things play together, as you can see. So it's not as simple as saying, I'm going to have a Gatorade, or I'm going to have one of the other electrolyte drinks. They are not that good for you. I still believe that my internal bleeds were triggered as a result of onset dehydration that was worsened by the high levels of sodium that I took in by drinking Gatorade. It is a problem. Be aware of how your body works so that you can protect yourself. Don't leave it to someone else, because by the time they get involved, it's already too late. You've already damaged yourself. Do you know that certain medications, including cancer treatment drugs, heart disease drugs, hormonal disorder drugs, they all will cause electrolyte imbalances? Antibiotics, over-the-counter diuretics, or medications like lisinopril, hydrochlorothiazide, common high blood pressure medicines, their general main purpose is that they are diuretics. In the old days, our grandparents used to call them water pills because it made you pee your brains out. I used to jokingly call them my I'm pregnant pills to make me feel guilty for when my ex-wife was pregnant. Kidney disease and damage causes electrolyte imbalances. Alcohol intake massively damages your electrolyte balances and causes dehydration. Malabsorption due to intestinal or digestive problems that you may or may not know you even suffer from. It is critical that you look at your levels. If you go for an annual checkup with your doctor for a physical, talk to them about getting a full blood workup so you can see what your levels are, your calcium, your chloride, your potassium, your magnesium, your sodium. You may be shocked to find out what your levels are in your blood count. It's important. I also, by the way, highly recommend when they do that, you get your doctor to do a test, which you may not know is completely separate to be requested, is to find out what your blood type is. You may never want to get a transfusion, but knowing what your blood type is can be very useful in many, many different situations. So help yourself by acting ahead. Do things that will help you to maintain yourself. Remember, one cup of water, one cup as in measuring, not one you're holding the cup in your hand, every 15 to 20 minutes. Workers working in heat or under high stress should be reminded to drink water frequently before becoming thirsty in order to maintain good hydration. If you are thirsty, you are already becoming dehydrated. In the old days, They used to give people salt tablets because they were concerned about them losing too much sodium. You absolutely should never take salt tablets. More importantly, nowadays you have to watch out because all these processed foods, almost everything you buy, even a candy bar, has sodium in it, salt that they've added because they have basically trained the palates of Americans and Westerners to live for the taste of sodium. The problem is sodium is overwhelming in most people's diets when they eat highly processed foods, and it increases the likelihood for high blood pressure and a whole plethora of other problems that come. If you're going to eat on the trail or on the run, using things like Clif Bars and other protein bars, you must be aware of the effect. High protein diets will cause your body to utilize and throw off more water than low protein diets. And the more dense the protein is, the more threatening it is to you in dehydration issues and other. Remember, ultra high levels of protein taken in at one time, your body can't process quickly enough without a lot of water. That means you have to drink at least 8 to 12 glasses of 8-ounce glasses of water each day just to handle the protein that you're bringing in to throw it off. That doesn't include the threat that you're already going to have from high heat, high stress, high strain, strenuous work in outside conditions, and all the other things involved in both physical labor, laborious activities that you normally may not be used to. If you're out of shape, it's even a higher threat. All these things play together again. So if you're going to use trail bars or trail mix, remember, if it's high in protein, it's going to dehydrate you. Find a balance. Some of these bars are 30 grams of protein. The average hamburger is only 23 grams of protein in some cases. So you've got to look at how these things all play together and a balance. And it takes time to get used to making these calculations wisely. But be aware, if you're going to carry bars with you for food, you need protein intake, you need that to fuel your body. But you also need to remember that if you're low on water or if you're in a position where you're under high stress, you have to balance that with more water, more clear liquid intake, readily available to become total body water mass, and lower amounts of protein. Once you stop burning, once you stop sweating your water off, and you become in a position where you can intake and hydrate, then intaking protein with it in order to feed and fuel your body is fine. It's a balance again. So in the next segment, I'm going to deal with what it takes to deal with dehydration, bringing your electrolytes back into balance, bringing your body back into a total balance with a sodium water balance, and help your body to recover from even limited, moderate, or extreme levels of dehydration. So that's next. In this segment, I want to speak about things that I've picked up over the years, hiking, camping, and working in the outdoors, as well as those things that I've learned from others and picked up along the way who are, quote, experts in the field, speaking both from the medical side and in the industry of hiking, outdoors, camping, etc., and what they recommend in order to beat the heat, to survive the heat. So I want to get into a few things about that and talk about what you can actually do to help yourself to survive the heat. So the first and most important step to beating the heat is to hydrate. So if you are going hiking, camping, backpacking, trekking, or trekking away from a disaster, one of the things that you have to consider as one of the key primary parts of your kit is the ability to carry fresh potable water, water that you can cook and drink from directly. So I talk about it all the time. some of the things that you need to do. In my estimation, one of the best choices for water purification out there is a combination of a Sawyer 0.02 pack, the 4-liter double pack, where you can, it's referred to as a purification, not a filter, because at 0.02 absolute micron, that's going to stop cryptosporidium and pretty much everything else. You will not be able to stop the chemical VOCs from being taken out. By the way, boiling point on some of the VOCs is as high as 800 and 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. So the problem there is the only way you're going to get that out is through reverse osmosis. And even then you may have a problem. And on top of it, utilization through scrubbing that water with several shots, several passes of activated carbon, because as you've heard me say before in episodes that I've talked about regarding water purification, it's all about dwell time. So I recommend a combination of the Sawyer 0.02 and the Rapid Pure filter, which has carbon in it, and an electrostatic filter. So between the two, you can put the inline electrostatic carbon filter from Rapid Pure in line from the Sawyer. With that, you are guaranteed minimum of 15 minutes for 4 liters of pure water from water pretty much anywhere. So these things are important because you need to have water with you. Always have a backup plan. You may not find a source of water. So don't listen to these people who hike in what are known as improved areas, where they have water fountains and toileting facilities or outhouses and water, artesian well water and the like. This is not always necessarily going to be possible for you. Even if there are standing or moving bodies of water, you may not be able to draw potable water from it because of contamination. So you need to have plan B. You always need plan B and plan C for that matter. So that means you have to carry water with you. How far will you go before you get to a place where you absolutely know that you will be able to obtain water? You don't want to be begging for water from other people on the trail. You don't want to be begging for water from people with houses along your path. You need to be able to supply your own water. There may be nothing in reach of you. As of June 12th, I think it was, the Harbor Freights in my area had them on sale for $5. They normally go for about 10 bucks all around. You can find them on Amazon and other places. This is really critical. You have to have means to be able to protect yourself. Use a full-brimmed hat. If you're wearing a cowboy hat, bend the sides down. So instead of being pulled up like a lot of people like to do, you pull them down. It will keep the sun off of the top of your ears, reducing the likelihood that you'll have melanoma. In the winter, I tell everyone, dump your cotton. Cotton kills. But in the summer, cotton retains moisture better than synthetics, and it helps to keep you cooler. It can limit your range of motion sometimes, but it keeps you cooler. So there are a lot of things that you can do to help yourself to prevent yourself from becoming dehydrated. Another thing that helps is to keep your mouth wet. And you can do that by sucking on hard candies or chewing gum. I'm not big on gum, but I do chew gum. I keep a pack of gum in my kit because when you're hungry and you're shy on food, your body will trick itself to believing that it is eaten when you're chewing and swallowing from having gum in your mouth, because that will help by tricking your brain to thinking you have eaten. The other side of the coin is it also keeps your mouth wet. When you can no longer chew and have your mouth stay wet, you know you have crossed that line into dehydration. So never let yourself get there. Drink, chew gum, suck on hard candies, keep your saliva glands active in order to cool yourself. It's like a dog when they pant, the water that's on their tongue, it will evaporate and it will help to cool. The panting does the same thing as sweat, where the water evaporates. The nature of evaporation is that it causes cooling. That's why your body sweats, in order to cool itself. If you're not sweating, that's a very bad sign, or it's very unhealthy, one or the other. So you need all of that to work in tandem together. There are lots of other things that you can do. I carry one of those folding Chinese fans, the Asian fans, that I can keep in my pack close where I can grab it, because just waving that will cause motion of air across you, which will help. Find shade. Find means to work out of shade. If you can't avoid the shade, then find your way into shade as often as possible so that you can cool down before you get started again. Don't be in a rush, because if you move too quickly and you fail to allow your body to recover, then you're going to have a problem. Another interesting thing is to carry some washcloths or some towels. I use hand towels. In fact, one of my favorite things are the microfiber towels that they sell in 20 packs for cleaning your car. They're really nice. They're pretty good size. They're like 20 by 20. They're good size. If you wet it with a little of your drinking water, you can put it underneath of your arms. You can put it on the sides of your neck and in your groin area and as a compress, and that will help cool your blood, which means cooling the blood going to your brain and to your major organs. This is a really big help. You would be shocked how much effect that will have when you're beginning to slip into overheating and into dehydration, to help you to cool down. That's really important. So also think about purchasing some of the electrolyte mixes that are low in sodium or moderate in sodium that you can add into your water every so often in order to increase the levels of your electrolyte. There are so many things that you can do to help yourself maintain. They all, though, come back in one way or another to the idea that if you wait, if you ignore the symptoms, if you ignore your responsibility to take care of yourself, you will be in the hands of someone else who may not be as good as you, may not care as much as you about the outcome, and may not even be willing to help you. Don't leave yourself in that position. Always put yourself in a way that you are able to take care of yourself. You need that. Going back one last time to carrying water with you, this is once again why you need to consider other means. I've talked a lot in the classes that I've given on water purification and gathering of water about water catchment, about rainwater catchment, and other things. There are lots of things that you can do to move large volumes of water. In Africa, they have a thing called a water hippo. It looks like a 55-gallon drum with an axle going through the center of it that allows them to use a handle and pull or push the water in that 55-gallon drum instead of trying to find a way to carry that much water. And there are lots of other methods that you can do. You can have 7-gallon bottles that you can fill with water and put 2 or 3 of them, or get some of those stackable ones that lay low and go wide, and put them onto a cart and pull them on the cart. There are lots of ways you can do that, but none of them will work if you don't have them when the event happens that demands that you do it. Again, think about having a means to tote water, and tote water without high levels of energy expended, causing lack of caloric intake problems and dehydration problems to be enhanced. All these things come together. Again, I'm starting to sound redundant to even myself. which I apologize for, but these things are so important. You can overcome the threat of dehydration if you're in a situation where you don't have cooled area, if you don't have a cool place. You can find cool places. You can find ways to work around the hot sun and out of the direct sun. But you have to think about these things up front. And they all begin, all end, with you maintaining hydration from the start. If you fall behind, you are going to be in deficit, and it will be a spiraling, speeding spiral to your end. Don't let yourself get there. Thanks for joining us. That'll be the end of this segment, and we'll see you next week. So hopefully the three segments for today regarding beat the heat and avoiding dehydration and how to handle and survive in the heat will be of some help to tickle your little gray cells in order to make you think about more than just the big disaster, but what you deal with every day. If you go out, what if your car broke down? What if you got stuck walking 2 miles to go to get help? What if you were unable to move to somewhere safe after a disaster without walking out in the sun? What do you have with you today that you are prepared for in order to make it to that location safely, securely, and with your health intact? So remember, hyperthermia, hypothermia, they are the results of extreme temperatures, extreme cold, extreme hot. Hyperthermia is directly connected with heat stroke and with issues of dehydration. That's why I wanted to cover those subjects today. Hopefully I was not too redundant. I don't think you can ever talk about it or say it too many times. It's important that it sinks in. You're all bright enough to understand that, but we get very busy with our lives and the things that demand on us every day. It was really, I thought, important to cover matters that will help you. We have people who work in their vehicles, are out all day in the vehicles, even with the air conditioning. You got to watch out. You'll overheat your car. Make sure you're watching. Make sure that your fluids are up in your vehicles. Make sure that everything is up to snuff, because you don't want to blow up your vehicle and then be totally exposed to the elements. You want to be prepared. Have your kit in the car. Like with the winter, you should have a summer kit. You should have loose-fitting, light-colored clothing that you can put on so that you can trek out and be cool. You need a wide-brimmed hat. You need lots of fluid. Do not put bottled water in your vehicle, in clear bottled water, in clear bottles that will sit in the heat. When it hits 98 degrees, it leaches toluene into the water and will poison you. You need to have water in heat-resistant, non-leaching bottles, like a 5-gallon bottle that you would use in a water cooler that you can then transfer. The hand pumps for them are really, really cheap. You can get one for $5 in Walmart from Prime. Lots of options. All, as usual, must be done ahead of the need, not after the need. Please, don't wait until you're overheated. People get sick very quickly wearing synthetic fibers out in the heat. It makes it very hard for your body to wick and cool. Wear cotton. Bring extra changes of shirts and things, because if you sweat, you may get embarrassed when you're out if you're working. But better to sweat and evaporate to cool your body than to be overheated and suffer the negative effects. Have an extra pair of extra dark sunglasses all the time, along with the full brimmed hat, so you can put it somewhere in your vehicle, because if you get caught off guard, you will have them with you. If you cycle to a new set, put the old ones in your vehicle so you have them. It's a backup set if you forget them, and if you don't, then you still have them. So remember, you can get sunburned eyes, so protect your eyes. UV proof, UV, high UV protection glasses. Have a spray or a bottle of suntan lotion with you. I, by the way, highly recommend choosing the applications of sunblock that are made for children. Remember, when they banned PVC in products touching the mouth or intaking food or liquid for children, they did not ban it for adults. When they banned BPA-containing plastics for children, they didn't ban it for adults. If it's not good enough for children, it should not be good enough for you. So it's the canary in the coal mine. If you need to choose things that are safe for you, that don't have other chemicals that are going to absorb into your body. These are important things. Come prepared. We are prepared. We are people who prepare and are survivalists or preppers or whatever you call yourself. Don't fall down on the things that will directly affect you at all times. I believe that we have the skills, we have the knowledge, and it won't take a lot of money for you to get yourself in a position where you can cool yourself. A spray bottle, right now, I think you can find them again for a dollar. They come seasonally every year in Walmart, in Dollar Tree. You can find spray bottles that you can put water in that have a fan on the front that run on a AA battery, and it blows so that you're getting that cooling effect of the water mist. Lots of things that you can do to help yourself. I mentioned in the last segment about going to Harbor Freight or going online and purchasing a cooling towel that you can put on yourself to cool using evaporative cooling methods. Hard candies to suck on to keep your moisture up in your mouth so that you don't dry out and it causes you to stop. Because remember, dogs pant in order to cool. It will dry you out even more if you don't. Do things to help yourself. That'll be it for today's show. Until next time, I am your host, Will Hemingway. This is Practice Preparedness. You can find us on practicepreparedness.com. Stay cool. Stay out of the heat. Stay working. Stay vigilant. And as usual, as I always tell you, there is no disaster when you're prepared. Don't wait until it's too late. Be prepared. We're out of here. And that, unfortunately, will be it for this edition of the Practice Preparedness Radio Show. I am your host, Will Hemingway. Thank you for spending your time with us today. Don't forget to click the links at the top of practicepreparedness.com, to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and meetup.com. Until next time, please don't wait until it's too late. Live proactively, act with purpose every day. Have a plan and practice. Because, as I always say, there is no disaster when you are prepared. We hope that you'll join us next time for the Practice Preparedness Radio Show. Have a good day.